I'll fly a starship across the universe divide. And when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning. Real quick, didn't have an opportunity to do this in the last segment. Programming note. We'll have April Murray Fogle, a couple other guests to be named later, joining us on the program. So make sure that you tune in for that for tomorrow's programming, which ought to be just equally as riveting as today's. But joining us now, always a pleasure, our friend from the 2nd Congressional District, soon to be the 1st Congressional District, Congressman Barry Moore. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Jeff, we are doing well. Good morning to you, sir.
Hey, thanks for making time for us. We always appreciate it. Well, can you give us the rundown? What's the vibe in Milwaukee? Watching on TV, it does seem, I gather the optimism, and I do sense not a too boisterous of a situation, but maybe a little bit of confidence going into the third day here.
Yeah, so it is. I tell, people have asked me that question. And you know, I was at 2016 convention in Cleveland, as you were. And there was a level of excitement. You know, Donald Trump, he was drawing some incredible crowds at his events. And of course, everybody was excited to nominate him. But this year, there's something different in the air. And I think it's a level of excitement with a level of resolve. And it seems to me, because of what they put this man through, whether it's the two impeachments, the raiding his home, the rigging of evidence by Jack Smith, the lawfare that's been used against him, the millions of dollars he spent in legal defense. They've tried to put him in prison for life, and then there's an assassination attempt. And so there is a level of commitment to these folks here, and then I think around the nation, a resolve to support this man, not because his policies are great, but because he's committed to this country. And I think in some ways, to me, Jeff, they know he could ride off in the sunset. He's willing to stay and fight to the point that he risked his life last Saturday. And I think that so the people here and across the country, I heard somebody say they're willing to walk across broken glass to vote for him. I think that's the feeling. And, of course, I think the confidence level, as we see the Democratic Party in free fall, Joe Biden's horrible debate performances, the possibility of removing Biden from the ticket, I think at this point, the nation's uniting behind the party, behind the message, and certainly the policies, but also this man's willingness to serve this country. And so it's just a different feeling in the air, a level of confidence, but resolve that I am not an experienced goer to these conventions, but just being in politics for the last 10 or 12 years. My goodness, man, it is something different in the air, and we're excited about it.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that, that people, you know, whatever your political stripes are or your ideological stripes, the guy almost died trying to, I will say died for his country, like in the sense of, a member of the armed services or something like that, but wanted to be in public service and had that close of a brush with death. And it was close. I mean, we're talking centimeters, right?
Incredibly close. It's so, unbelievable.
So I would just think that, I mean, that has to resonate with people to be like, well, this guy is the real deal if he's willing to take these kind of risks.
Yeah, like you said, I don't think he wants to be the president of the United States, Jeff. I think there's a willingness for him to be president of the United States, and that's a difference. He's not seeking fame. He's not seeking notoriety. He's one of the most famous people on earth. He's done this job before. They came after him in an incredible way. I was there when he was sworn in on the day one in 2017, January 21st. Buildings were burning, cars were on fire, and the man hadn't even served a day in the office. And so there was just an attack on him from that point forward, and it's been incredible to watch what they've done to him and what they've done to his family. And yet at some level, he is so committed to this country, he's not willing to throw in the towel. And he's one of the toughest human beings, emotionally, physically, just to be willing to get back up after that and shake his fist in the crowd and say, fight, fight, fight. He wasn't talking about for him, man. He was talking about for this country. And I think that's what we appreciate about him. He has nothing to gain, everything to lose, and yet he's willing to put it on the line. And I think that just says so much about who he is.
Yeah, I I've been going around with Parker Griffith about that all morning. The voter in this country, a lot of it's already baked in, but you can't you can't undo what happened Saturday, see what happened Saturday, and not have, if you're undecided, not have that kind of change your perspective about at least one of the candidates.
Absolutely. And I think if you just look at the convention speakers so far, it's been his opponents, it's been his naysayers, it's even been Democrats, it's been union leaders, people who are saying, we now support this man. And I think we saw a movement in urban America when they arrested him and convicted him. I think that moved a lot of minorities who had felt they were victims of the system to see him being a victim and for just standing for the country. And I think in for many cases, them in a way that they maybe didn't realize up until that point, whether it was securing borders or whatever it was, economic freedom, those things. But yeah, there are people coming into this camp that we've not seen. And he told us a few weeks ago in D.C. before this assassination attempt, even that on WinRed, after his conviction, he normally would raise $8 million a week. He raised $58 million from small dollar donors, 30% of those people who had never given. And so there was already a solidification I don't know what the word is, but people moving to his support. But after that assassination attempt, if you're just sitting on the sideline going, how many billionaires do you know that would actually take a bullet or get shot at and try to send him to prison? They try to break him and him still be willing to do this job. It's astonishing to me. I'm grateful that his life was spared. Obviously, I think that was the providence of God Almighty. There was just too many things, brother. I was in the military and I was one of those guys. I got expert marksmanship. But from 140 yards, if he had not turned his head and just moved the muzzle of that gun, it would have took just a little wind, and this thing could have been totally different.
Yeah, but thankfully we're not having that discussion today. But
amen.
The Secret Service, Congressman, and seeing what we see there, and then I get the remorse, and they acknowledge they screwed up, but the consequences of this failure. Number one, the woman who's head of it. I mean, she's got to go. She has to fall on the sword. But secondly, Republicans so far in this RNC haven't made a big deal like I would have thought. Now, if it's been the other way around and it was a Democrat president, I mean, I think we would have had four nights of hate out of the DNC. But the approach is a little different here. But to me, the whole breakdown of the Secret Service is sort of symbolic of just the Biden administration in general.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the DEI hires, all this stuff, you know, the box people need to be checking to go to work for this country needs to be qualified. And many of the people, obviously, we've seen hires for the Mayorkas, the Garland, all those guys. It's a fixed deal, and that's the problem. And we've said this, and I think I've heard it said in judiciary a bunch of times, people are losing confidence in the system, the justice system. And when you know that Jack Smith planted those documents and took those photos, and they were trying to put him in prison for life, and then all of a sudden somebody tries to take his life, and the response is, well, you know, we'll have to have a review. We'll have to look into that. Brother, that is concerning for me, and I think there's a lot of people in the country that the credibility of this government and this leadership in this country was already eroded. Based on what we've been seeing, we've never arrested a president before. We've never tried to put one in prison for life. But the fact now that a guy gets with a long gun on a rooftop for a minute and a half, and he was already marked by the Secret Service, they were already targeted in on him. But the problem is, once a round goes down range towards the president of the United States, the mission has failed. They should have took him out before he ever pulled the trigger. And the question is, why was the green light not given? And that's what we need to get to the bottom of.
Well, what do you think that looks like? I know the Oversight Committee is looking at this, and they got a lot of questions. And I've seen some of the interviews from House Oversight members. Your colleague, Gary Palmer, has raised them on this show. How long will it take till we get some answers forthcoming through the levers of power on Capitol Hill?
You know, that's the problem, is it'll be down the road, I'm afraid. I mean, I think we can let this lady fall on the sword and she can be the scapegoat. But remember, Secret Service is under DHS, which is Mayorkas, Alejandro Mayorkas. And he is in charge of that whole operation. He's also the guy that's supposed to be securing the U.S. southern border. So there are questions within this administration of exactly what is going on and why would somebody get that close within a perimeter and have a clear shot to the man on the stage, maybe 140 yards away. That is astonishing to us. That raises so many questions. And again, the concern of the credibility of what length they're willing to go to, that's something we have to get to the bottom of. And I don't know that we'll know it before this election, but I was talking to a friend of mine, former Green Beret, and he's experienced a lot of things in his life. And he thinks the president needs to up his security, his own personal security, and even bring in some guys, a couple guys from Mossad, maybe SAS, because there are other countries. Now, Iran has put out apparently a hit on the president. So we've got to make sure that we secure him by whatever means is necessary to let him be sworn in as president of the United States and get us respected again around the world. Our enemies don't respect us, and our allies don't trust us. And we've got to make sure that we get this man into office to help this country recover. And the system itself is terrified of him, but the system must be brought to bear.
Well, let me ask you this question. I mean, like, how close is this incompetence to malice? I mean, like, where did they pull resources off of Trump because of, you know, whatever reason they don't like him? And, you know, do some of your Democratic colleagues want to strip him of his Secret Service detail? What do you think of that? I mean, do you think that maybe there's something else going on here that just has more to do with it being Donald Trump's detail that led to this?
Yeah, when you got the chairman of January 6th calling for him to lose the Secret Service as a convicted felon, we know that was directed at Donald Trump. That's the only person that has a felony conviction right now that I'm aware of in the world that also has Secret Service. And for them to want to defund his Secret Service, Denny Thompson, who chaired J6, which we know was an artificial committee set up by Nancy Pelosi to go after any conservative America First people, now all of a sudden they're wanting to remove his Secret Service, and a few weeks later there's a kill shot at him. And honestly, even one of his staffers said, how did you miss? I mean, this is Benny Thompson's staff saying this, the man who wanted to remove his Secret Service. Dude, that raises so many questions for us who are sitting here as everyday Americans who don't trust this system anyway. And to see him almost kill the former and future president of the United States, that to me, again, is astonishing. There are so many questions that have to be asked, Jeff. And it makes American people who didn't trust this government, there is a level out there. Even Corey Mills said it. He thinks that maybe, and he's a member of Congress, former special operator. He said himself that this looks like maybe they knew what was going on. I don't know, brother. I can't say for sure. It's going to take some time to find out. But it's not implausible that people think that.
Joined by Congressman Barry Moore here on the program. Well, back to the RNC and first off, tell us, what did you make of the J.D. Vance pick?
Oh, I think he's an excellent choice. He's been, you know, J.D., like many Americans, I think, were never Trumpers. If you go back and look at him, he did. But he said once he got to know the man, the American people have got to know this man. I think Saturday sent another message of who he really is. And so J.D., having come up the hard way, been in the Marine Corps, he's America First guy. He's very brilliant, and I think he's young enough. I mean, he's 39. I thought he was older than. He's 39 years old. So Trump is setting, he knows he's got 4 years to get the ball rolling to fix some of the problems, and we can fix the border and all those things day one. There's a lot of things that Trump did in his first term that he can continue to work on. But J.D. Vance can continue that legacy of making America first for another 8 years after Trump. And it's going to take some time. This country didn't get a system that wasn't for the people, of the people, and by the people overnight. And to get it back to the people, it's going to take some time. And Vance is young enough. He's smart enough. He's very capable. And so I think he is an absolutely dynamic pick.
Well, Congressman, I mean, you've been on the Trump train from the get-go. We talk about it all the time, Ladd People Stadium in 2015 and being one of the first people in my memory to endorse him formally and kind of watching Trump in the 16 election. He's sworn into 17. I think he had a lot of voices in his ear, and he sort of went against his instincts and put people in places that he never should have. Tillerson, and you could go down the line, all these people who are now bad-mouthing him. But, Congressman, I feel like the Vance pick at least kind of turns the page on that, and he's going to be more loyal to what he thinks the right thing to do is instinctively, maybe this time around if he is elected.
Yeah, I love the fact that, you know, Trump's a business guy, and I think he thought, Jeff, and when he went in 16, that, hey, I tell these people to fix these problems. They're gonna work for me. I'm the president of the United States. This is the way the system works. But what he didn't understand is the system wasn't working for him. It wasn't working for the American people. It was working to maintain its own survival. And so he's learned a lot of lessons. He's a brilliant guy, Trump is. And Vance also gets that. He hadn't been in the system a long time. He's been in D.C. a couple of years. They haven't gotten the hooks in him. And we need guys who are willing, that are not political politicians or career politicians, but who are willing to say, hey, you know what? The country's more important than my job. But keeping my job, I think that we need to elect people who are true, what we call statesmen and not politicians. And Vance, to me, fits that. Trump fits that. I was with Trump early on because he was an outsider, and I'd seen that we needed people from outside the system to fix the system. The system itself controls a lot of those within it. And so I think Vance, Trump, and hopefully America First people from around the nation are getting elected. And I think that that's going to be – he learned from the mistakes the first time. I don't think we'll see him make those again.
So, I mean, just sitting here today, I mean, and then, you know, things – everybody says things can change, but – at least in my lifetime, maybe with the exception of 80 and 84, this is probably as good as it's has been going for Republicans heading into November.
Yeah, I think so, Jeff. And I think that the party is not the same party that it once was. I think that it truly has started focusing on, and I'm not saying the I mean, I love Reagan. He's the first guy I voted for. But I'm thinking that Trump is, he brings a different dynamic to the party itself. It's an American first approach instead of everybody else. And so I think that he's certainly bringing people within the camp. I mean, we saw the union president speak here, and to me, the fact that he was even here, I don't think that's ever happened. And I've often wondered, even with the unions, I mean, I have so many friends who are on Fort Rucker or Fort Novosel that are in the unions. They get frustrated because they're conservative, but their money always went to the Democrats. And so The fact that you have the president of the unions here speaking, saying, hey, I'm at the convention. He didn't necessarily endorse Trump, but a lot of, I think the people within the unions and the minorities are coming to see that this man's policies are good for them and they're good for the country.
Carson, we got to leave it there. Stay safe up there. Safe travels, and look forward to hearing again from you.
Hey, yes, sir, Jeff. Thank you.
All right, Congressman Barry Moore there. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Inside my head. Before I reached 30, I'd be dead. But somehow